23. Into the Ruins. Modo felt a poke on his shoulder and opened his crusty eyes to find Mr. Socrates standing next to the bed, impatiently tapping his walking stick. Time to rise. Did you bring me tea, toast, and boiled eggs? Mr. Socrates laughed. I see your sense of humour has woken along with you. You'll be on your own for breakfast. Modo read the clock on the desk. It's 6:30. I've hardly slept. It'll have to do. 2 more members of the government have been attacked. 1 was killed. I know. It's awful. He expected Mr. Socrates to blame him because he'd forgotten the names of some of the members of the Young Londoners Exploratory Society. But instead, Mr. Socrates raised an eyebrow. You know? Mr. Gibbons told me last night. Do not talk to members of the association without me. You are my agent. Do you understand? Modo nodded, and then, as if to lighten the mood, Mr. Socrates smiled and gave him a friendly tap with his walking stick. I know I've been pushing you these past few days, but we have to move quickly. The Queen is sequestered in Buckingham Palace, under constant guard. She's devastated that her grandchild, Prince Albert, is missing. The parliamentarians are behaving like frightened rabbits. If the Clockwork Guild's goal was to inspire terror, they've succeeded. With the names you've provided, we should be able to prevent any further damage. We hope to discover where Hackendottir and her accomplices have secluded themselves. Then they'll feel our wrath.
I understand.
You and Octavia will explore the ruins of that burned-out house. I've read the chief officer's report. It wasn't thorough. Are you rested enough to transform?
Perhaps.
Do what you can with your appearance and get dressed. Octavia will arrive any minute. After his master left, Modo got up, his bones creaking. The bandages on his arm were dry, and when he peeked below, he was pleased to discover that the scrapes had scabbed over. He willed his body to change, picturing the night, the face he had put on around Octavia before. It took him a minute to straighten his eyes and lower his ears. Truthfully, he was too tired, but he imagined being able to laugh and talk freely with her. He concentrated until his new face took shape. It was handsome enough, though his eye was still red where Hackendottir had poked it. Then he worked on the rest of his body, but the harder he tried to transform, the more his facial features would melt away. He gave up on his body, leaving himself only a little taller and less hunched over, preferring to keep his face perfect. Clothes had been left on a nearby dresser, so he pulled on a grey vest, jacket, pants, and gloves, choosing a camlet cloak to cover it all. He went downstairs. In the kitchen, he found 2 peeled boiled eggs in the icebox and shoved them in his mouth, washing them down with a cup of cool tea. He made his way to the library and looked up at the curved rows of books. If only there were time to read. He doubted he'd find any Varney the Vampire tales or other penny dreadfuls, but it would be fun to read Shakespeare again. After some searching, he found a row of Shakespeare's plays and opened a copy of Hamlet.
Oh, you can read, can you?
Octavia stood in the archway, wearing a striped green dress. Modo needed his hearing checked. How had she crept in? The fabric of her long, full skirt shimmered, the light playing over it in such a way that she could have stepped out of a stereoscopic image. He couldn't help staring.
Yes, he said, finally. I can read. Well, congratulations, Modo.
She floated over and grabbed the book from his hands.
Ah, Hamlet. He's too much of a gabber, that boy. Wouldn't survive a second in our world. It's Shakespeare.
He raised a hand as though on the stage.
Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt, thaw, and resolve itself into a dew. See? It's marvellous. Marvellously boring. Though there is a good sword fight at the end.
He snatched the book back and returned it to the shelf.
I see there's no point in arguing, he said jokingly. It felt so good to have her eyes on him. Did you shrink in the wash? You look shorter.
Hardly.
Well, something's changed about you. But we should go. Our chariot awaits.
She gave Modo an appraising glance.
I do say, In that get-up you look a little like you could be my servant. Will that be the game we play today?"
"Yes, my lady."
He gazed at her perfect face.
"Good."
She waltzed out of the house. Scampering after her, Modo grabbed one of Mr. Socrates' walking sticks from the bin beside the door, deciding it would make him look more sophisticated. Octavia climbed gracefully into the cab, despite her dress's large bustle. It took up so much of the seat, however, that Modo had to squeeze against his armrest. He revelled in her flowery scent.
"We're waiting," she said.
"For what?"
"For the address of the house."
"Oh, yes," Modo said. 22 Balcombe Street."
"Don't tell me, tell the cabby."
22 Balcombe Street, please,"
he said a little louder.
"Right-o!"
The reins snapped and the horses cantered down the wide, curved driveway. When they reached the street, each stone and rut jarred Modo's rib.
"We're living in some very strange times," Octavia said.
"I'll say. The murders are terrible."
"Oh, that, of course."
She waved her hand as though she encountered such intrigue every day.
"I was referring to us meeting again. It's a pleasure."
"It is?"
"Yes, well, Mr. Socrates talks about this shadow organization we belong to as if there's a great network of spies like us. But you're the only agent I've ever met more than once. So that's the pleasure."
"The pleasure is all mine."
"Of course it is."
Something about the tilt of her head made him blush. She was looking at his face and seemed to like it.
"I do find it peculiar that Mr. Socrates is sharing so much information with us. He has faith in our skills."
She guffawed.
"He only has faith in Queen and country. I believe he's become desperate."
"He doesn't get desperate. He's acting with speed and good judgment."
"Are you his agent or his parrot?"
"I'm not a parrot."
He gave her his best withering look, and she responded with a grin.
"Well, any thoughts of your own?"
"Yes, of course.
These young gentlemen have been poisoned with a tincture that makes them automatons. That's what I understand from speaking to Oscar Featherstone."
"How exactly did you do that?"
"I walked into the Tower of London and interviewed him. In disguise, of course."
She was silent for a moment.
"That's impressive."
"You'll find that I have many faces."
He couldn't help chuckling at his own joke.
"So, you're more than just a pretty face."
She paused.
"I do wonder about these orphans, this business about them being larger and stronger, and having bolts embedded into their shoulders. It's so ghastly."
"Why did you disobey Mr. Socrates' order and try to take the girl to the hospital?"
"That sounds a little judgmental."
"I'm just curious."
"Truthfully, Modo?"
"Because that girl was once me. She didn't deserve to be part of such a cruel experiment. It's happening because someone thinks she's worthless. Being an orphan doesn't make you worthless."
"You're not worthless," Modo wanted to say. He couldn't imagine her ever being as sad and dreary as some of the poor children he'd seen. And Tharper had once talked about how his father had been an untouchable. Never seen, never missed. Was that what those children were?
"I want to bloody the nose of the person behind this," Octavia said. "What's the point of it?"
"Perhaps Mr. Socrates and his associates know. Last night I met several of them."
"You did?"
She patted Modo's knee.
"Tell me, tell me."
"Well, the men are all older than Moses."
She laughed, and Modo grinned with delight.
"There was a woman, too, not a friendly sort. Lady Artemis Burton, I'd wager. I met her once with Mr. Socrates. She's a walking ice sculpture. Did you know they call themselves the Permanent Association?"
"How'd you discover that?"
"Oh, I keep my ears and eyes open. They chose their name because they want to bring order to the world and have Britannia rule it permanently. After all, the British way is the best way."
"You sound doubtful."
He stroked the handle of the walking stick.
"Who am I to worry about that? Let the mucky-muck plutocracy stab one another in the backs. It's richly entertaining."
"What kind of attitude is that?"
My own? You should try having your own. What does that mean?
Nothing, Governor.
Modo snorted. She was the most exasperating person in the world.
Well, if you disdain them so much, why do you work for them?
She gave a thin slice of a smile.
Because the job is a brilliant, exhilarating game.
They passed near a park, and Modo observed well-dressed boys and girls hitting a ball with a wooden mallet. One girl laughed with another, and Modo felt envious. He'd never played games outdoors.
What are they playing?
He asked.
Croquet,
Octavia said.
Haven't you seen it before?
I've read about it.
She went silent, so he turned his head to look at her, and discovered that she was unabashedly staring at him. Panic struck his heart. Was his face changing? But then she said,
Only read about croquet in books. You're an odd one, Modo.
Before he could respond, the cab stopped with a jerk.
Here ye be,
shouted the cabbie. Modo climbed out and leapt from the last step to the street, getting a sharp twinge in his rib. Nonetheless, he offered a gloved hand to Octavia, who took it and elegantly descended from the cab. He liked how firmly she held his hand, and was sorry when she let it go. He dug in his pockets, but he had no money. Octavia smiled and paid the driver. They walked through the front gate, which had been left ajar. The house was charred, and the lingering smell of smoke brought the events of 2 days earlier flooding back. The mad fear of being trapped in that chair like an animal, the flames leaping around his feet. The stone wall still stood, but the roof was gone. Judging by the scattered spoons, burned boxes, and broken chairs in the yard, scavengers had already been through the house.
You're stooping a bit, Modo. Are you unwell?
Octavia asked.
It's only an affectation.
He had been using the walking stick for support because his body was slowly twisting into its hunched shape.
People underestimate me, I find, if I behave like I'm crippled.
All the same, Modo straightened up.
You're almost as tall as me when you do that.
While they poked through the rubble, Modo kept an eye out for his haversack, even though it had likely disappeared in the flames, along with his spyglass. He missed the spyglass. It had been a handy tool. He turned over a few bricks with his walking stick, stopping when he found glass on the ground outside a charred window.
This is where I jumped out. You must have been very frightened.
Frightened? He waved his hand.
I just needed a breath of fresh air.
Octavia gave him a playful slap on the shoulder.
You're a right jolly jester. I like that.
They worked their way through the house, avoiding places where the floor had been burned away, revealing the cellar. Modo spotted a half-burned pair of India rubber boots, and the sight prodded a memory. He nudged them with the stick. Three pairs of boots sat here, and fur had a scent of sewage about him.
Curious. Most gentlemen don't stroll in the sewer for a bit of fun.
A curly lock of hair had fallen loose and bounced gently on her forehead. It mesmerized him.
Featherston did talk about descending into Hades, he said. Hester may have disappeared down a manhole. It would make sense for us to look underground.
Will it be safe? Modo's voice cracked. The idea of climbing into a rat-infested sewer made his skin crawl.
Safe? Be brave, Modo.
This isn't about bravery, he lied.
It's about the wisdom of going where we may not be able to breathe.
He thought he sounded very rational.
The rat catchers and sewer workers survived down there. It hasn't rained for a few days, so the flow should be lower. We don't want to go back to Mr. Socrates with nothing. He becomes such a crab when that happens.
Modo laughed in agreement, feeling a little traitorous for doing so. He gave the boots a final prod, inadvertently twisting the knob on the top of the cane. Something at the end of the cane flashed and sliced the boot in half.
Zounds!
Octavia walked over to him.
What is it?
He lifted the walking stick to find a 5-inch blade protruding from its end.
Mr. Socrates' walking stick is also a weapon.
He turned the knob back again, and the knife slid into the base of the stick.
That's a nasty piece of work. Mr. S. really does like his tools.
Modo made the knife eject again and again.
"Fascinating," he whispered.
"When you're done playing, we'll continue our work."
"Oh, fine. Where do we go?"
"I assume there's a sewer entrance in the vicinity."
They walked to the backyard, where Octavia explored a well built of stone. Modo looked in the garden shed, then behind a fountain. He crossed the wooden floor of the gazebo and was taken by the sound. He tapped it with a walking stick, then again with his right foot, hard. It sounded hollow. Looking closer, he saw the outline of a trapdoor surrounding him. As he took another step, the slats beneath his feet snapped. He let out a scream, grabbing at the air as he fell. A breathless second later, he hit the bottom, jarring his legs.
"Modo!"
Octavia was looking down from at least 10 feet above him. He moved his legs, which hurt but weren't broken. He tapped his foot on a circular stone lid and yelled with all the drama he could muster,
"Behold, I present to thee the sewer!"